Hi, y'all. Thanks for being here. A while back now, maybe 10 years.
Does that work?
Doesn't appear to. We won't need it. We started working with FAO in Rome to develop the aquacrop model. And some of the lysimeter data from Bushland were used in the development of the model. Terry Howell and I were involved. And we followed through that. And the first aquacrop model that came out, we did a special issue. We actually did a symposium here at ASA on that, did a special issue of Agronomy Journal. At that time, aquacrop did not very well model water use efficiency under deficit irrigation. It did pretty well under fully watered conditions, but when you started pulling the water off, if you had deficit conditions, it didn't do well. And we've continued to follow that. Aquacrop is now in version 4, and we're very interested in seeing if Aquacrop version 4 actually is doing any better. My co-authors include Nazar Abragamov, who came and spent a year with us and did a lot of this modeling work. He's with the Cotton Research Institute in Uzbekistan. Robert Schwartz and Judy Tolk. Okay, so there's aquacrop. It's a crop model intended to simulate attainable crop biomass and harvestable yield in response to available water. And it was intended to be an important tool in planning and guiding irrigation management, both at the district level and at the farm level, and be easy enough for extension agents to use and even on some farms for producers to use. But there are these questions about its ability to simulate water use and crop yield when water is limiting. So our study objective was to look at some data from cotton that we measured in 2000 through 2002 and see if we were going to have accurate soil water balance, including evaporative losses, soil water content, above ground biomass, and yield. And we had both fully irrigated and deficit irrigated cotton. The fully irrigated was irrigated to replenish soil water content to field capacity weekly. So we used a neutron probe, a field calibrated neutron probe, and measured the soil water content at several places in the field and used the average deficit below field capacity as our irrigation amount, and irrigated that. And this was a Paymaster 2145, at the time a variety that was widely grown in the area, and you can see where we're at in the panhandle of Texas with that blue star. That's the southern high plains. It's a very dry environment. It's a very high ET environment. Pan evaporation there is in excess of 2,000 millimeters a year. The fields were irrigated with lateral move system, with low pressure nozzles. This is a Pullman clay loam soil with low permeability, and it holds the water up near the surface. We measured the crop ET with large weighing lysimeters with an accuracy of 0.05 millimeters. And we backed that up with field neutron probe soil water balance measures of ET that were done weekly or biweekly, so we could compare the lysimeter ET to the field ET and make sure the lysimeter was representing the field. And we measured leaf area and above ground biomass regularly through the season, and lint yield and seed lint yield at harvest. Hydraulic properties come from several previous studies, including those that Robert Loscano and I did, Robert Schwartz did over the years, and including some data from Baumhart and Loscano that I haven't put in here, actually, and I apologize for that. The maximum crop water use coefficient for a Penman Monteith FAO 56 type model is 1.2 at Bushland, and this has been verified by Howell's paper of 2006. Every time we've looked at this in our data, that's what we come up with. Judy Tolk and I measured the readily evaporable water from four soils in the high plains using 12 replicate lysimeters for each soil. And the lowest readily available water that we measured was 13 millimeters, and it ranged up to 21. KEX factor for saturated evaporation from a fully wet soil was 1.15, and that's also referenced in a paper published this year in Beto Sloan Journal. We used a crop number, a curve number of 30, because this is furrow diked. It's basin tillage, and it holds the water on the land, so there's very little runoff, so the curve number is low. And we use the default decline factor for evaporation of 4. And you'll see why I'm emphasizing these parameters here in a minute. And we tested the model against measured data from 2000. That's what I'm going to focus on. After initial model runs, we did secondary model runs where we attempted to improve the major inaccuracies by modifying parameters. And I'll show you how we modified these three parameters, the first three. Setting initial conditions, because we measured the profile water content at planting, and we needed to begin simulations before that to account for pre-plant irrigations that are often necessary in our environment. We did an iterative adjustment of the initial profile water content simply by setting an initial profile water content and running the model through the planting date and comparing the profile water content predicted at the planting date and changing the initial water content in the profile until we got a match. And we got a match of measured 480 millimeters in the top 1.5 meters and estimated by the model at 474 when we'd iteratively set this initial profile water content. And we got a lot of evaporative overestimation. We looked at the evaporative loss through 14 days after planting, which was about when this crop emerged in 2000. It took a long time to emerge. So this is bare soil evaporation. And then we followed that through to 44 days after planting on day of year 181, when the crop cover fraction was 0.1. And at that point, it overestimated ET by 49 millimeters. Well, you know, in English units, that's 2 inches of water. That's a lot of yield, potential yield. We reduced the readily evaporable water to 1 millimeter, and at 14 days after planting, still overestimated evaporation by 13 millimeters. We reduced KEX to 0.5, and overestimated evaporation was reduced to 10 millimeters, still overestimated. And it's too bad that thing's not working. But let's see if there isn't a switch. I don't see a switch. Yeah, see if you can make it work. So the top graph is the overestimation versus initial water content. And if the initial water content was 0.25, the overestimation was 81 millimeters, and it was reduced to 0.05, that's what the figures were. Thank you. Thank you. At 0.05 for initial water content in the top soil layer, these are the numbers that I'm giving you over here. Well, 0.05 in this soil is the residual water content at absolutely air dry. If you take this soil and spread it out over a concrete surface and let it dry for 2 weeks in the hot sun, that's the water content you get. And it can be that dry in the field at Bushland, but it's unlikely. The next graph down is overestimation in terms of readily evaporable water. You see a similar trend, and you only get reasonably close to what actually happened with unrealistic low value of readily evaporable water. And when we looked at KEX, it was the same story. Anything less than 1 is really unrealistic in terms of KEX because we've measured this. We know what those values are. The simulations that we did, if we set REW to 13 and KEX to 1.15, and started with an initial water content of 0.25 in the top layer, then we got this sort of a pattern. And notice that in response, this is where we started with water content, 0.25 in the initial layer. These are the lower layers below that. These are 10 centimeter thick layers. And we lost a lot of water to evaporation. Then we irrigated, or it rained. I forget which one these are. And we got increases. But they're well below the field capacity. We shouldn't be getting potential E losses if the water content's below field capacity. That's completely unrealistic. We get potential E losses when the water is at field capacity or greater. And you can see the great overestimation we got here before crop emergence under those conditions. We had 129 millimeters of irrigation and precipitation in this period, and there was no flux into the second layer in this model. We simulated 151 millimeters of evaporation during that period. The only way that can happen is that we had upward flux in response to the soil water potential gradient. It had to come from the layers below into that top layer to be evaporated before we could get this value. Yet we had no potential gradient driven water into the second layer, which is here, from this layer when it wet up. So there's something not right. And this is it's a bucket type model, but it's overly simplistic. And that's the message here today. We've made a model that works well if you start at planting and the crop cover grows quickly and it covers the soil and you're not really worried about evaporation from the soil. But under many arid and semi-arid irrigation conditions, you have to worry about the evaporative loss from surface irrigation early in the season. And this model cannot accurately reproduce that. And that bottom graph simply shows that if we started off with this 0.05 meter cube per meter cube, we accumulated water, and we actually got water content up here to greater than 0.3, whereas when we started with a larger water content, we never arrived at 0.3. Start at a small water content and arrive above 0.3, start with a large water content and never get up to 0.3. We have a problem, and we have to solve this problem. And we don't have access to the code, but we are working with the people that do and trying to solve that problem. And this is an illustration of once we set these parameters to really unrealistic values, the measured KSAT is 66 millimeters per day. We set that to 276 millimeters, very high. And we finally got realistic responses, including up here near saturation, that would explain higher evaporation rates if the soil were that wet. And that did reduce the overestimation of evaporation in this period. And it reduced the overestimation of evaporation even though that top layer was very wet. So again, something in the model is really unrealistic. It should be overestimating the evaporation even more. Now, there's a consequence with yield. What happens is this dark line is the northeast lysimeter. It was where we got all the data. This dotted line is the estimated evaporative loss. And this is about crop coefficient of 0.1 right in here. Not crop coefficient, crop cover of 0.1 right in here. And this is the overestimation of evaporation. And later in the season, we have a great underestimation of evaporation. And what's the effect on yield? Well, it really diminishes the yield because the soil water isn't there to drive yield. And here we're showing the overestimation of ET, and over here we're showing the simulated yield. And the yield is going down as the ET is overestimated early in the season. So early season overestimation of ET in the first 3 to 4 weeks greatly reduces the model's ability to correctly estimate yield later in the season because there's no soil water when the crop is at full leaf area. So our findings are the parameterization or parameterized aquacrop model using measured parameters. Using measured parameters that we measured in that soil at Bushland, overestimated cumulative ET of full and deficit irrigated cotton in 2000 until about 44 days after planting, and lately greater underestimated ET around first open boll and later in the growing season. The model evaporation was insensitive to the layer thickness. We did try different layer thicknesses. I didn't show you those data. And it was insensitive to the hydraulic conductivity set by the user. So we did vary those hydraulic conductivities all over the place. It didn't make a difference. The model simulated upward capillary flow in response to differences in soil water potential, but did not simulate downward capillary flow in response to a potential gradient. Given this shortcoming, varying the value of saturated hydraulic conductivity of the top soil horizon had little effect on simulated water content dynamics, nor on the simulated ET. And getting simulated ET right in early in the irrigation and growing season is important towards estimating cumulative biomass of cotton during the growing season. So even in version 4, we're still not getting yield and water use right. So we're still not getting water use efficiency in response to irrigation management correct. And this is what we need out of this model. We need to know how irrigation management affects water use efficiency, and we're unable to do that. If there's any time, I'll entertain questions.
We have about 5 minutes for questions. We've got to start a little early. Go ahead.
Dr. Allen.
The REW, readily available water, should just represent stage one drying.
Right.
Skin. But did you try adjusting the second layer, which is, should be the total evaporable water that will contribute to evaporation?
Come again.
Well, the second layer in aquaculture crop, the second soil layer, isn't that like the 10, 15 centimeters?
It's what you set it to be, but it actually doesn't allow you to set a layer thickness less than 10 centimeters, so yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
I would think if you reduce that, I think the way the model is designed, that layer contributes to total evaporation.
Reduced what?
Well, reduce, say, your soil water characteristics that you assign to that layer to force it to give up less evaporation.
We did not change that in changing parameter values. We did not change the hydraulic conductivity of the second layer. We could try that. I doubt very much if it would have much effect.
Not conductivity, but just field capacity.
Hmm?
Field capacity.
Yeah. What about it?
Well, you reduce that, you reduce the size of the reservoir.
Yeah, you can reduce any of these parameters to unrealistic values. The field capacity in this soil is 0.35. I can reduce it to 0.2 and get an answer that seems reasonable. What I'm telling you is that if you use measured parameters, you're not going to get the right answer. And by the way, if you use the REW out of FAO 56 or out of your latest paper, you're still using an REW for that soil of about 11, and you get really high evaporation rates. So the model itself has got some real problems. Yes, sir?
How did they combine an infiltration and heat distribution?
In the model? The model is a fill and drop. It's a tank type model.
So
you fill and then it drains. Yeah, and because of the way evaporative loss interacts with the water content of that first layer, when you're over predicting evaporative loss, it never gets wet enough to drain.
I think that's a problem.
Yeah, that's a big problem. Yeah, that's what's going on. Yes, sir.
I have some experience in simulating some of your experiments, corn experiments, using this type of models and roots on soil. I have very good. generic type, you know, you get very gross ideas, not very detailed ideas.
The purpose of aquacrop, as stated by FAO, is to help us manage irrigation. And when it's this wrong, it does not help us.
No, irrigation is good, too, yeah. But not detailed, you know, layer-wise. You want to do layer-wise, and it exactly coincides with this. You need a very good crop model, like, for example, this side. And we need a very good infiltration and redistribution model, like root.
Yeah, my argument is that those better soil water dynamics should be an aquacrop because it fails with the system it has now for soil water dynamics. It simply fails, and we need to do better. Yes, Dr. Lascano.
Congratulations for telling us that a bomb does not work. And I applaud you for that effort. That's all I'm going to say.
Well, and I want to respond to that, actually, because we all know that models don't work. What we want are models that work well enough to be useful. And my message here is that this model does not work well enough to be useful. So we need to work to improve it, and we will.
One thing, though, yeah. Steve, that they seem to have done well on corn, which is not working on cotton, or the different side factors.
Well, the corn data that Lee Hang published was our data.
Yeah.
Yeah. And part of the difference was in that year, we didn't have that early season dry condition where we had to pre-irrigate, where we had to actually... So she didn't start modeling until planting. And it made a big difference in the results. Yeah. Same soil and everything. But what appears to happen, and we've simulated several crops with aquacrop at, you know, using these same data, if you start simulating at planting, and if your crop comes up fairly quickly, and in this case it took 2 weeks to get the crop up, that sometimes happens in our conditions, if it comes up fairly quickly, like in the first 6-7 days, then you start to get plant cover, and it hides these problems. Because you're starting to get large transpiration. You get that rapid crop growth. And so this wasn't picked up when we did the corn paper. But we happened to pick it up in this paper.
Okay, let's give it a hand for Steve and
thank you. Do we have time for one more?
Sometimes we put the model around not defend the aquacrop, but yep. What is the mechanism to get it fixed? What is the mechanism to get it fixed?
Well, the mechanism is to work with the model developers, Dirk Reyes and others, and present the evidence and say, we need to fix this. And we've actually done that, and I believe Dirk is working on the problem. So I hope that in a coming year I can stand up here and say, yes, we fixed it, and here's how great it is.
Thank you for that presentation, Steve, and thanks everybody for your questions.